improv.
Come on, I'll take you. And we're back at the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. I'm Hollis Walker, sitting in for Mary Charlotte, and that was the voice of Vincent Price on Thriller. And my next guest is Victoria Price, Vincent Price's daughter. Good morning, Victoria.
Hi, Hollis.
I'm so glad to have you today. Victoria is going to be the MC at a fundraiser for the Santa Fe Film Festival that's happening Thursday night at the Jean Cocteau Theater, right?
Yeah.
And what is going to be showing?
We're showing House of Wax in a digitally restored Blu-ray 3D version. It's actually really exciting because there are only two projectors in the whole world that will show this in a movie theater setting. And Sony is flying one in from Australia for it with mechanics and people to set it up. And it's going to be a really beautiful experience to see this movie digitally restored and in 3D.
So it's a Halloween night, and it's a fundraiser for the Santa Fe Film Festival, and it's the 1953 classic, probably your dad's most famous film, would you say?
One of them, certainly. It's his first actual horror movie. Up to that point, he played a lot of villains, but this was his first horror movie. And most people think of him as a horror actor, but actually less than a third of the movies he made were horror movies, and this was the movie that shifted him into that genre.
Yeah, we've talked about this before because my mother, who's 85, remembers Vincent Price as a romantic lead. She was starstruck by him, as were many young women her age at that time, in his romantic lead. So when he went into horror films, that was a whole different shift for her and those like her to see him in that role.
Exactly. He was actually brought to Hollywood as a matinee idol. He was an incredibly beautiful young man. And the studios wanted him to be a leading man and matinee idol, and he was actually never comfortable in that. He wanted to be a character actor. The actors he admired were men like Spencer Tracy and Edward G. Robinson and Jimmy Cagney, but he didn't look like them. He looked like a beautiful man, and it was very hard for Hollywood to find a place for him. And so when he started playing villains, he really felt like he'd come home, but horror was a completely different leap.
And it was kind of a strange thing for him because, I mean, Victoria's written a biography of her father, Vincent Price, the daughter's biography, and in that book you describe your father, and he was much more of an aesthete than people who just have seen his horror films might think.
Absolutely, and actually I think that was one of the things that drew him to this role, to House of Wax, because the story is about an artist who is misunderstood and actually... I won't give the whole storyline away, but early in the film, the work of his life is destroyed, and that is what sets him on this path of revenge. So that's really what drew him to this movie. He really felt that artists were the most important contributors to society, and the idea of somebody's work being destroyed, I think, seemed a very suitable reason to exact revenge on a lot of people.
Right. Do you think that... because of the nature of who he was, that doing these roles as a horror, you know, these scary, villainous sorts of roles, was sort of an expression of his shadow, you know, the side of him that he didn't express in his own life?
Yeah, I suppose possibly. Nobody's ever asked me that question. You know, he was one of the most positive people I've ever met, and I would say that he very seldom showed his discouragement to other people, but he definitely had a maudlin side, and he was a perfectionist. He had very, very high expectations of himself, and when he didn't fulfill those expectations, he really felt that he had let himself almost more than other people down. So I think that he had this dark side. Although I think he had a difficult time with the violence of the horror movies. That was something, especially as horror movies became more violent, it was something he didn't really understand in the genre. And he felt that in general. He felt that when Hollywood movies couldn't show a lot of things, they were almost better. He used to say it was way sexier when all they could do was kiss and then you had to imagine what happened afterwards. And it was the same with horror, he felt, that if you got right up to the point of the bloody, scary thing, but you didn't see the bloody, scary thing, it was actually scarier to imagine it than to see the blood spurting out of, which is what we do now.
Right. I always think of, I'm not a big horror fan, because of that, precisely because of the violence and so stuff. But I always think of the scene in Psycho where Janet Leigh was stabbed to death in the shower, and you never see her being stabbed. You see shadows and you see the blood in the bottom of the bathtub, but you never actually see the stabbing. And for me as a young person, that was certainly more frightening than, you know, seeing the actual violence itself.
And recently a list came out, and I think Psycho was number one of the scariest Halloween movies ever made, and that is precisely it. It's scary because of what we imagine, not what we see.
Right. And you didn't watch these movies of your dad's as a kid?
God, no.
Because your parents wouldn't let you, or?
You know, yes, partially, but the reason they wouldn't let me was because the very first time they took me to see him in a play, it was Peter Pan, which is a kid's play, and my dad was playing Captain Hook, and apparently I freaked out. I mean, like, loudly in the audience. And my mother, who is British and very reserved and not one prone to public expressions of anything of any kind, was mortified to be sitting next to this 5-year-old child who was having an audible fit in the middle of the audience. And they actually had to take me backstage during intermission. And I have an entire photo sequence of it. I have all 7 photos showing my coming to see my dad and how upset I was, and him gradually explaining and showing to me that the hook wasn't real and he was still my dad. But I think after that, they decided it was probably a bad idea for me to see scary movies. But the funny thing was, a couple weekends ago, I was at a horror convention in California, and I was there with Bela Lugosi Jr. And his daughter. And we were invited to take this walk through this haunted house by the guy who had created it. And neither of us wanted to go. We were like, no, we don't like scary things. And finally he had to take us after the convention closed on a private tour with half the lights up, because neither of us wanted to see all the bloody things. And the same is true of all the horror kids. Boris Karloff's daughter's another old friend of mine. And we all feel the same way. We don't like the scary movies.
So tell me about this horror convention and what were you doing there?
There's actually a huge following. I often say I give talks a lot around the country and around the world about my dad's life. And whenever I'm in front of a room of horror fans, the first thing I do is confess the fact that I'm not a horror fan. But then the next thing I tell them is that I'm grateful to the horror fans, because without them, my dad would not be as remembered as he is. And in fact, I think he's probably more famous now than he was at the end of his life, and he was pretty famous then. But at these conventions, horror fans come in and they get to meet horror stars, kids of horror stars. They get to buy all kinds of scary things. I think Halloween has now jumped up to be the number 2, I believe, retail holiday in terms of commerce and money made. And so at the last one I was at, the focus, interestingly enough, was on horror makeup, because it was pre-Halloween. So there were all these famous makeup artists and makeup schools, and people came in and got made up, and my little table was right across from one of them, and it was hilarious. All day I would watch people get transformed from being just a normal person into being some disgusting bloody mess, and they would walk by my table with these gaping wounds, and it was amazing. It was hilarious, actually.
You know, I Googled your father this morning at 5:20 a.m. I Googled at Vincent Price, and I tried actor Vincent Price. Actor Vincent Price came up with 2.09 million, I think it was million, hits.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, and that's pretty amazing. He died in 1993.
20 years ago, about 5 days ago.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, it's very interesting, because the actors who were far more famous than my dad in his early career during his lifetime, people like, let's say, Robert Taylor or Ronald Coleman, these were the Tom Cruise's, Brad Pitt's of their generation. Really, only people who were classic movie fans watched them. And it's kind of amazing to me the number of young people who are fans of my dad. When I go to these conventions, I inevitably meet 4 to 5 people each convention who have large tattoos of my dad on prominent parts of their body. And inevitably, I meet one or two people who've named their children after him at this last convention. The best one was a guy. He came up to me and he said he had just had twins in the last year. And he named the twins. One was Victor Frankenstein, whatever this last man, the man's last name was. And the other one was Vincent Price, whatever, Schlockenfelder. That was, those were his twins' names. I was almost dumbstruck.
Why do you think, what is it that you think makes people become attached to your dad, like enough to, and I've seen one of those, I've seen a picture of one of those tattoos of his face on someone's thigh. You know, why, what is it about that?
I've wondered that myself, and in fact I started playing a game with myself and all my friends after I began seeing these tattoos, and I would ask people, if God came down and said you will be struck dead at midnight if you don't agree to have a tattoo of a prominent person you will never meet on a visible part of your body, who would you choose? And usually the answers are pretty safe. I get a lot of Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Jesus Christ. So I think that actually puts my dad in pretty good company. But the interesting thing is, why my dad, right? And I think it's because for a lot of these people, he was an outsider who managed to fit in. And the irony, of course, is he was raised in an upper middle class family. He went to private schools. He went to Yale and the University of London. In no sense of what we conceive of as an outsider was he one. And yet, I think the reason he was an outsider was because at an early age, he fell in love with the visual arts. And in the 1920s, to be an aesthete, as you termed it, made you an outsider. He was born into a family that were very successful business-wise. They were actually nationally known as successful businessmen. And so for him to fall in love with the arts made him feel like an outsider. And for him to choose to pursue a life in the arts, and his passion through his life was the visual arts. He served on, you know, literally probably hundreds of museum boards. He started the first modern museum of art in Los Angeles. He founded museums himself. He collected art from the time he was 11 years old. So he was an outsider, and yet he managed to fit in society and prove that you could be an outsider and be successful. So I think he is this sympathetic person who seems to be classy, intelligent, sympathetic, kind, and I think that is what makes him appeal to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So I'm talking with Victoria Price, who is going to be the MC Thursday night, Halloween night, and a fundraiser for the Santa Fe Film Festival that will be at the recently reopened Jean Cocteau Theater. And if you're interested in getting tickets to that fundraiser, you can go to the Jean Cocteau in person, or you can go online to jeancocteaucinema.com and go see House of Wax. And of course, it is a costume event.
Yes, it's a costume event. Now, I suppose I should say here that I actually loathe Halloween, loathe costumes. The daughter of a horror movie star and a Hollywood costume designer, Halloween was not my favorite holiday. I always wanted to be, you know, a cowgirl, and my mother would make these costumes for me that were elaborate and hideous, in my opinion. But I do appreciate the degree to which people love costumes. And even at these horror conventions, people come fully dressed up. So it seemed only appropriate that we sponsor a costume contest. And we're hoping that a lot of people will be inspired by my dad and my dad's movies and come dressed up in various Vincent Price or Vincent Price movie roles. But really, anything is suitable. We have great prizes. Actually, VincentPrice.com is sponsoring the costume contest and a trivia contest and a lot of prize giveaways. So we, and Warner Brothers has kicked in some prizes as well. So we have a lot of fun prizes to give away. And we hope this is going to become an annual fundraising event that we will be able to, VincentPrice.com and the film festival will be able to bring in a lot of other horror movie stars and show classic films every Halloween in Santa Fe.
How fun. That'll be great. So, you know, one of the things that's interesting about your dad and his art interest and his aesthetic interest that I wanted to ask you about was he had a deep connection to the Southwest and to art here, right? Didn't
yes.
you spend a lot of time driving around out on Hopi?
Yes. You know, my dad grew up in St. Louis, and people always think he's English, but he grew up in St. Louis. And in those days, his parents would let him go play wherever. And one of the places he loved to go play were the Cahokia Mounds. And for people who are fans of anthropology, archaeology, Native American cultures, you should make a visit to the Cahokia Mounds. It's one of the earliest Native American cultures, and it's a mound culture. So they built up these massive mounds because, of course, it's flat in the Midwest near the Mississippi. And it's incredible. And so he used to dig around there and find artifacts. And then he was sent to camp when he was a kid up near Mesa Verde. And he really wasn't excited about going to camp at all. And they gave him these horses to ride around on. And but a couple cool things happened. They were taken to Mesa Verde, where they were actually swung into the caves on ropes. It was before they built the whole ladder system. And my dad said it was incredible because you could actually sort of create this whole story for yourself of what had happened. Because it looked like somebody had just been in the middle of eating dinner and been vanished in a funny way. And he was fascinated by that. And then one day while he was riding his horse, he looked down and he saw something sticking out of the ground, and he discovered an ancient Native American burial ground. And it was a tribe that flattened their children's skulls on cradle boards. And so it was a very distinctive burial ground. And he had his picture in the paper, and he was 11 years old, and this was this big deal, so he was hooked. And from the time he was in his 30s, he began coming to the Southwest. He judged the Gallup Ceremonial, which is one of the big tribal festivals. And he became involved in the Indian Arts and Crafts Board, which is part of the Department of the Interior. And he did that to preserve and promote Native American arts. He was also very active in the founding of the Institute of American Indian Arts with Lloyd Kiva New and Fritz Scholder. And so, yes, he was... long before Marlon Brando turned down his Academy Award to promote Native American causes, my dad was much more quietly promoting them. And it was one of the great passions of his life. He had an amazing Native American collection, in particular, one of the most extraordinary prehistoric pot collections. He probably had, I'm not joking, 1,000 prehistoric pots. And apparently Hans Conried, who was a very funny Hollywood actor, used to say to my dad, "Well, you're the only Hollywood actor about whom we can't say you don't have a pot to piss in."
So he left much of his collection to East Los Angeles College, right?
Yeah, it was a pretty cool thing. It was actually my mother's idea. My mom and dad were very involved with a two-year college out in East Los Angeles. And they were also involved. He was on the first board of the L.A. County Art Museum. He was the president of the UCLA Arts Council. But they wanted to give the collection to some place where the students might not otherwise have had access to art. So over their lifetime, they donated 2,000 pieces to the East Los Angeles College Museum. And now it's called the Vincent Price Art Museum at East Los Angeles College. It's an incredible facility. It's a $25 million LEED certified building. And it really focuses largely on Latino art and underrepresented artists. So for Pacific Standard Time, which was the big sort of Southern California-wide program to show Southern California-based art, we did a Chinese American art show. So it's a really amazing facility and amazing program.
Yeah. So what are you doing these days? You've folded in many of your own talents into your work. You've done interior design, and you've explored combining that Native American art interest, I know, with contemporary design. And you still go around and talk about your dad a lot. What is this going on for you?
You know, I think I've turned into this weird amalgam of my parents. My mother was a designer, and so the core of my business is doing interior design, which is residential and commercial, as well as furniture and textile design. But I love the public speaking. It's really my favorite thing. And I taught for many, many years, and I helped start a school here in Santa Fe. And public speaking is like getting to teach. It's getting to share what I feel will help remind people to stay inspired in their own lives. My dad was an incredible public speaker. He was actually the second most popular lecturer after Eleanor Roosevelt, and he lectured on the visual arts every year for 30 years, 60 cities in 65 days, every January and February. And hearing him speak when I was a kid really made me understand the power of the spoken word. So last week I was in Texas doing a talk for a president's circle at a museum about art collecting, and I give talks about industrial design at schools and at businesses and in design gatherings all over the country. And then, of course, my friend Sarah Karloff used to say that her dad said that October was his busy season. Apparently it's turned into mine. So next week I go to the largest European horror convention, which is in Germany, Weekend of Horrors, to give a talk about my dad. And I spend a lot of time at those conventions signing autographs and having my picture taken, which is hilarious. And all of my vendors here, for whom I write a lot of checks on behalf of my clients, said, maybe we shouldn't actually cash those checks. We could just save them so we can have your autograph. I said, no, the check's a lot more valuable. Cash the check.
Do people tell you you look like your dad?
When I was a little kid, I looked exactly like my dad. It was uncanny, which I'm not sure was a good thing for a little blonde girl, but nonetheless, I did. Now I think I'm really an amalgam of my parents. When I look at pictures of both of them, I think I'm a combo. We did a photo shoot last week at Spago in Los Angeles because my parents wrote a very famous cookbook, and we are going to reproduce a 50th anniversary commemorative edition in 2015. So we did this photo shoot at Spago, and I was looking at the pictures yesterday, weeding through, you know, hundreds of pictures, and it was sort of terrifying to see that I actually just have, I don't know, morphed into both of them.
It's probably true for all of us, but we don't have it. Parents as famous as yours, of course.
Right. I have access to a lot of pictures. I was in Denver recently and ended up chatting with somebody about Ernest Hemingway's wife, Mary, who bore an uncanny resemblance to my mother, also named Mary. And this, my dad found this out when he and my mom were at a bar in Key West, and Ernest Hemingway started shamelessly hitting on my mom. And and they figured out that my mom looked exactly like this woman. And so I was chatting about this with somebody, and I pulled out my iPhone, and I was able to find pictures of both Marys, and we were all able to agree, oh my God, they did. They looked very similar. So it is one of the interesting things about coming from a famous family. I always have access to their images, and of course, in the case of my father, as was proved at the beginning of this program, I always get to hear his voice.
Yeah, especially that fabulous laugh on Thriller.
Yeah, it always makes me smile. It really does. It has followed me my whole life. It came out the summer of 1983, and I was living in Rome, and you know, like a typical 21-year-old, I wanted to see everything in Rome and go to all the groovy Italian discotheques, and everywhere I went, my dad was laughing at me.
That's great. Now, are you working on another book?
I am. I actually am working on a number of book projects. As I said, we're working on the commemorative 50th anniversary edition of my parents' cookbook, and then two other book projects, a design book, which I'm really excited about, and then a book called Taking My Mother to China. I was very fortunate to be able to go to China. I went for 3 weeks by myself in March, and my mother grew up in China, and it was really a book about the trip I'd always wanted to take with her to go back and find the places where she had grown up in Shanghai. But she passed away in 2002, and so this trip was taking her, but it was taking her metaphorically, and it's a sort of journey of forgiveness, of taking all the stories that we carry around about our parents and being able to let them go, which is harder than one might think when one has famous parents and people are always asking to hear stories about them. So it's a question of owning the good parts and being able to release the things that still bind us.
Yeah, you can't ever really let go of that. I mean, you can't... We all struggle with those things of letting go of parts of our parents and those effects that haven't been so good on us. But for you, having very public and very famous parents, you can't ever really escape that. And I mean, does that ever feel constraining to you?
You know, a lot of my friends say to me all the time, I wish you would stop talking about your parents. And I don't think they mean that meanly, or that I don't necessarily think they're bored, though they might be. But I think really what it is they want me to recognize that I'm possibly interesting in and of myself. But it was funny last week as I was driving back from Texas and giving this talk, and the talk really uses my father's life and all the people he met as the arc of the talk to talk about the importance of the role of the art collector in society. And I began laughing to myself because my dad spent his life talking about people who mattered to him. He gave talks about Whistler and Van Gogh, and I thought how ironic he talked about all of these famous people, and I've ended up spending my life talking about famous people as well. I just happen to be related to them. But, you know, yes, sometimes I think, am I always going to be Vincent Price's daughter? But I really have realized that my father is still probably the most interesting person I've ever known, and I have a lot of interesting friends. I have a friend who won Wimbledon, I think, 9 or 11 times. I have friends who've climbed Mount Everest or swum from Cuba to Key West. I have fairly interesting friends who've done, I think, what the world would consider pretty amazing things, won Grammy Awards and Oscars, and my dad is still the most interesting person I've ever met, and I think it's because he went through life being curious about and interested in everything and everyone. And that's pretty extraordinary. We all become blasé at some point in our lives, and he just was alive all the time and every day, and I'm so grateful to have grown up around that.
Thanks, Victoria. So you too can see and hear Vincent Price again Thursday night at the Jean Cocteau Theater. There's a fundraiser for the Santa Fe Film Festival featuring the new 3D Blu-ray release of Warner Brothers' 1953 classic House of Wax. And after the film, there'll be a Q&A with Victoria Price and filmmaker Constantine Nasser. So you can get tickets by dropping by the Jean Cocteau Theater, or you can go online to jeancocteaucinema.com. So you too can go to the first annual Halloween Night of Horror, 6:30 p.m. on Thursday at the Jean Cocteau. Now, don't forget your costume. There is going to be a costume contest and lots of fabulous prizes. So I hope you guys suit up and show up for that great event. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Hollis Walker, sitting in for Mary Charlotte.